I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. We have a slightly sunny morning after a rainy night here in West London. We are coming to you remotely, but we have a packed show today, Jules, because it's obviously it's Champions League week. It's the Clásico coming up this weekend. We're going to be joined by the excellent Dan Thomas. And well, there's one place to start, I think. It's at Old Trafford. It's that comeback. Manchester United against Atalanta, 2-0 down at the half. Jan Åge Fjørtoft on the show last night, Jules, said, this is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, or Ole Gunnar as he likes to call him. This is what he does. This is how he rolls. Comebacks, late goals, always teetering on the edge, but always getting away with it.
Yeah, I think that's Jan being kind, right? Because I'm not sure how much of an input really Solskjaer had on the outcome of that game. I think this is a team that is very good mentally and the mental strength, and we know that, especially players like Bruno Fernandes and Cristiano. And this is a team that won that game, one, because Merih Demiral came off at halftime for Atalanta, and I think that really unsettled Atalanta. Two is because you've got huge players at Man United, of course you have. And when Bruno is in that kind of form, when then Pogba comes on, and I think brings a bit of creativity and certainly more talent to a midfield with Mark Fred before him. I mean, come on. But I'm not sure how much this is down to Solskjaer. I think it's more down to this incredible mental strength and not giving him attitude from Ronaldo and other players in that team, from the fact, as we said, of the Demiral aspect. And also, to be fair to United, they upped the tempo in the second half and they played higher up on the pitch and took their chances, and they could have scored more. It was certainly not as bad as the game against Leicester, but I still think that first half was so bad that there's a lot of issues still to be resolved.
Well, Ole Gunnar didn't think the first half was so bad. He said, well, Atalanta had two shots, scored two goals. I don't know. I don't want to get into that. I agree with you. Yeah. This was also an Atalanta team, of course, that was very under strength. It's not just Demiral going off at halftime. You know, they were missing Toloi at the back. They were missing both their wing backs, and we know how important Hatebor and Gosens are to the way they play. They were missing Pessina. So effectively in that second half, they had five starters out, and it's really difficult to go and spot the opposition five players. That said, if you're United, you got a tremendous lift from the crowd at Old Trafford. You can turn to the bench and say, like, okay, Cavani, Sancho, Pogba, you bring on fresh legs with quality in the second half, and you're still Manchester United. You are going to pick your spots. And then obviously Cristiano popping up at the end. I don't know. We always talk about Solskjaer in like a broader sense about where he is. He's going forward. He's got this incredible run of games. They've got Liverpool coming up. I don't know if he comes out of this game strengthened in any way, or if all the same doubts that his players must have about him are still there, and how that's going to impact him. And I'll tell you what, though, if they had doubts about him before, doubts about him now, they presumably had doubts before him for the last 12 months, and still this United team goes on.
I agree with you completely. I think the doubts are still very much there. Of course, they won, and that's good for them. It's great. It's another comeback, and they had to win, because I think another defeat and the pressure would have mounted so much in the view of the Liverpool game, and then all those tough fixtures, Spurs and City and the Atalanta game in Bergamo, by the way, it's not going to be easy either, especially if Atalanta gets some players back. And I think that win is huge, but I'm not sure it's huge for Solskjaer himself and the work that he's doing. You know what really annoys me? And maybe it's nothing, and maybe I read too much into it, and I don't want to be like bashing on Solskjaer so much, but I mean, him and his assistant. I mean, every time he goes, once it's Mike Phelan, once it's McKenna, once it's Carrick, and you see him and he has them like, what do we do now? What's happening? What shall I do? And you could see it. I mean, I know Pep speaks to Juan Malilo, and Klopp speaks to the other Pep, and okay, this happens. But it doesn't happen like that so much. I mean, the whole first half, he was like, and then he moves to McKenna, he moves to Phelan, because they're all in different places in where the benches are all traffic. And I'm like, come on, dude, man, you're in charge here.
Let's talk the choices he made before the game. And I thought it was interesting. And I'm going to use carrot and stick here a little bit with Ole Gunnar. Carrot, because I think he read the Maguire situation well. You know, we criticized him at the weekend because of what happened, and you know, you made the point that Maguire wasn't ready to play. I thought he made some mental mistakes, whatever. But I think he read that Maguire was ready to play, and I don't think Maguire played well, but especially not defensively. On the Demiral goal, no. If you watch it again, it looks like he's so late on Demiral that it looks like he's trying to punch the ball out of the air. This is never a good idea if you're a professional footballer.
Doesn't even see
him. He was there for the goal. I mean, you know, but equally though, dropping Pogba seemed weird. And immediately, like, when you drop Pogba, you do anything around Pogba, there's a whole narrative, well, he doesn't trust Pogba, right? He doesn't, people don't, and I'm sorry if I'm going to take have a go at the punditocracy, the commentariat here, but if Pogba gets dropped, it's not because, well, defensively, Pogba isn't as strong and he wants to go with two holding midfielders, blah, 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 blah. No, it's because he doesn't trust Pogba. Others put it down to the fact, this wasn't confirmed, but it is a weird coincidence that, you know, Pogba came out and said, well, we deserve to lose that game against Leicester, which, by the way, I think 99.9% of people would agree with. And supposedly Solskjaer didn't like that. I don't know if that's true, but this is the narrative out there. People are trying to create this Pogba v. Solskjaer thing, which every indication I've had is actually that Solskjaer likes Pogba. He's maybe not sure how to use him. And equally that, you know, Pogba likes Solskjaer as a person while also realizing that, you know, he's not God's gift to football tactics. Equally, I think Pogba is probably used to it, given that, you know, given some of the people he's worked with previously and he works with on the national team, so I thought that David Deschamps. Is there something to this that Pogba was wrong?
I was baffled. I have to say, when I saw the lineups an hour before kickoff, I was baffled that he was dropped for this game. I've got nothing against McTominay and Fred, and if you tell me, yeah, but they bring more balance to the team, they're more disciplined, this is BS. I don't buy that at all. Pogba can be very disciplined if that's what you ask him to do. He can be very good, he can protect your back four, he can work hard, he can defend well, he can fight. But what he will bring you in a game like this, where the midfield is so key, because you know exactly how Atalanta will play. You know how you can use Pogba in a game like this. Such a highlight from Atalanta. Pogba will hit the ball over the top easily. Atalanta will put a lot of pressure and intensity in midfield. Pogba is good under pressure. He can keep the ball. He can beat the press. And then you put Mark Fred in there. It was beyond me. And that first half, I thought, even if United were not too bad and they still had a couple of chances, decent chances, I thought it showed. It showed that Pogba wasn't there, and it showed that Fred and McTominay could not control that midfield at all. That's not what they do. I'm not really sure what they do, but that's certainly not what they do anyway. So I was really surprised, and I don't like it. That's it. I think Pogba should start those games. He could be, he is and should be and could be very important for that team. I was very surprised, and I don't know if it's coincidence or not, but it's a very good point that you make. He came out after the Leicester game. He went to do all the post-match interviews to take, responsibility for the team, and that's what leaders do. But he was very honest, saying, like, we didn't deserve to win that game because we didn't play well, and we have to do better. And maybe Solskjaer took that as a direct dig at him. I don't know, but Pogba, by the way, came on at 2-1, United were 2-1 down. And then maybe it's not coincidence again that United had their best spell in that second half when Pogba was on the pitch.
Obviously, Cristiano getting the headlines with the late goal. I think if games ended in the 80th minute, I don't want to think where United would be. He got all this praise afterwards as well for that run, that defensive run he made at the end. And Solskjaer, of course, took the opportunity to lay in there as well. Anybody who questions, you know, Cristiano's work rate. And again, maybe I'm too preoccupied with words and how we talk about things. This work rate Cristiano thing really, really bugs me. I don't want Cristiano Ronaldo to be sprinting 50 times a game making defensive recoveries. I don't want him to do that. No. And I think it was important at the end he did it and it gave everybody a lift. Fine. I want him to pick his moments to do it, because the reality, Cristiano is not a machine. If you want to use Cristiano to make defensive recoveries, you can get somebody much cheaper to do it. But it's going to impact what he brings you at the other end, because Cristiano is one of the greatest players in history, but he's also human. He's also 37 years old. And also, you know that this is already how he plays because the pressing statistics for United are out there for everybody to see. He doesn't press the way he did 10, 12 years ago. Not that he pressed very much back then either. But this whole discussion is really a bit silly. But, you know, he gets the winner afterwards. He gets praised, and you were struck by how he reacted afterwards.
There was a brilliant interview. I agree with everything you say again, and he scored that goal. You knew it was coming. It's a feeling, but the header is magnificent. The cross from Shaw is brilliant. The header is magnificent. The timing of it, the elevation, everything, the way he hits it, it's just perfect. And again, like Villarreal, he saves Solskjaer, he saves United. It's brilliant. And at the end, on English television, the reporter said to him, "Oh, you've done it again." And then he's got this face, and he looks and just doesn't say anything, just nods and goes like. And he's just such a goat. I mean, it's amazing. And yes, of course, there's flaws. And you're right. He doesn't press much. He doesn't press enough. And I'm not sure how much he could do anyway, even if you ask him to do it. Which could be a problem. Of course, I think in current football, this could be a problem if your front line doesn't press like they should. But he brings you so much more if the service is good again. And in fairness, I was a bit surprised when he missed a couple of the chances that he had before the header, before the goal, especially the one at the start of the second half. Musso made a good save, but it's a bit on the keeper. And I really thought he was going to bury that one, but he's so clutch. I mean, 137th goal in the Champions League against 38 different team. Crazy. And when Messi does something great on a Tuesday, you know that Ronaldo is going to do something great on a Wednesday. This is the way it is. They're amazing.
They're the yin to each other's yang, I think, is the technical term. I mean, look, is it fair to say with Ronaldo's late performances and late goals that if George Mendes doesn't get on a plane to do a roadshow around Europe to try to find Cristiano a home and he doesn't sign for Manchester United, maybe Solskjaer's not in a job right now?
It's a good question, Gab. He certainly has bailed him out. You know, a few times. Remember, even that second goal against Newcastle, when Newcastle come back at 1-1 on Cristiano's debut at Old Trafford, and Newcastle played well on the counter attack. They defend with that back five, okay. And then there's that goal from Cristiano, and after that they scored third and fourth. But all those goals, even against Young Boys, to go United are doing nothing before they go down to 10, and he scores that goal, and. This is what he does, and I do think that things potentially will be more difficult. It's hard to predict because we will never know, but certainly he's had that ability of scoring those very important goals at different times in games. I mean, especially Villarreal and Atalanta, they were huge for the confidence, for the results, of course, for Solskjaer, for the rest of the team, everything. It's incredible, and I guess what you've gained from signing him. And you've lost in what another striker, younger, for example, would bring you in terms of, again, pressing and I guess maybe movement on the ball, off the ball, all that kind of stuff that maybe Cristiano doesn't do anymore at 36. But those clutch goals are so, so important.
A word on Atalanta. Obviously, you know, this is the way they play. Guardiola had that great line about, you know, it's about as much fun playing them as a visit to the dentist. They're open, they'll go for the jugular. I take on board what you said about the return leg. Obviously, Atalanta will be at home in Bergamo. Equally, that probably suits United to some degree, because what United do well overall is counterattack, because they have fast wingers who score goals or fast wide players. I'm just wondering, you know, we were seeing a little more variety from Gasperini than kind of the all-out game. I think there are more pauses. They're a little more contemplative. Is there anything that he did wrong? Do you think he got something wrong? Because still, I go back to the old Italian thing. You give up a 2-0 lead at halftime, then it's your fault, no matter who you're playing. And I kind of feel that's not really fair.
No, you're right. It's interesting because at the break, they look good. I mean, of course, United had a couple of chances in that first half, and Atalanta were quite clinical in the way they scored the two goals. But still, that first goal, Ilicic playing that free kick quick, and then still being there to put the ball to Zappacosta for the cross, is brilliant for Pasalic. But then Ilicic loses the ball on the Rashford goal, and he should never lose the ball there, and that's nothing that Gasperini could do about it. Anyway, if Ilicic doesn't lose that ball there, then it's an amazing ball from Bruno to Rashford, great finish. But maybe, again, this is a big turning point in that game, because if United don't score so early in the second half, maybe the comeback is not on as much as the way it went on Wednesday night. So they could still have scored. De Gea made a few good saves to show again that he's back to his best, which is quite remarkable, that, again, how he turned it around to go back to his best. But for Atalanta, you must surely have a lot of regrets, Gab. Don't you think, after starting so well, Demiral coming off is big, as we've said before. And I guess maybe if Gasperini had a few more experienced players in that midfield that could have sort of closed the game defensively as well, maybe had Toloi been there, we will never know. Yeah. But it felt like a missed opportunity, doesn't it?
I think so. I think you would have seen them, you know, slow the game down, and the fact that you have to play Martin Deroon at the back rather than in the middle of the park, that definitely impacts you, the absence of Piscina. And then, if, as you said, you know, you play the second 45 minutes without Toloi and Demiral, without you know, two guys who I think are pretty important for you, and that's before you get into you get into the wingbacks and what they can do for you, and what they can do for you as well in pinning United's wingers back. I don't know if United can attack in the same way, and I say this with the max respect to Male and Zappacosta, but if that's Gosens and Hattebor out there, but I think, if you're Atalanta, you look at this and you say, you know what, this group is far from lost. We're in a good position. We have to believe that we can beat Villarreal, regardless where we play them, and get the 3 points against Young Boys. And so when you look at the table, if you can do that, in fact, even a win and two draws, I think, could be enough for Atalanta, given the dynamic of how this group is unfolding.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjewels, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjewels now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/gabjewels.
All right, enough United, Jules, because we've got a little football game going on this weekend on Sunday. It's not the only big game on Sunday. In fact, in this crazy seven-hour period, we're going to have Inter playing against Juventus, Liverpool playing against United, and PSG playing against Olympique Marseille. But the granddaddy of them all is the Clásico. And so we have Dan Thomas. We sent him all the way to Spain. He'll be coordinating some of our coverage on ESPN Plus. Dan, both these teams had some pretty big Champions League games as warm-ups for this. They both won in different fashions. Barcelona 1-0, thanks to Gerard Piqué. And, of course, Real Madrid running riot in Kiev.
Yeah, very different performances, wasn't it, Gab? You take a look at Tuesday's match, Real Madrid dominant. The front page of AS today, all about Vinicius Jr. and how he's very much come of age this season. Obviously criticised in the past for getting himself into good positions, but not taking his chances. Boy, he's doing that and some so far this campaign. So it's all about Vinicius Jr. from Real Madrid's perspective. From Barcelona, the headlines are horrible. Despite the fact they got the win yesterday, it's very much kind of, we won, but just. They're still talking about that it's kind of lacking of engagement between the fans at the Camp Nou and the team after the departure of Messi. What they'll be hoping, obviously, that Sunday's game will be a trigger for the fans to once again fall in love with their club.
But Dan, you lived in Spain, albeit a few years ago. You know how this psychodrama ends. It only takes a Clásico to turn it around, to turn a bad season around, to change the mood, to lift the vibe. At least we always thought that in the past. Do you think that's still the case today?
I think the problem is Jules's favourite man, Ronald Koeman. So you could come out and you could beat Real Madrid on Sunday, but still Barcelona are only really judged on their last performance. So that could all go wrong if they were then to lose their next game. For Real Madrid, I think it's slightly different. I think they come into this game as favourites. And for them, it's just getting some momentum with regard to their title race. So I think looking at it, as you say, you could say in the past, Clásicos have been able to erase everything that's gone wrong in the past. But I don't think you can do that now because Ronald Koeman is still in charge.
Jules, I kind of feel that everybody was so kind of Clásico focused that they almost overlooked this game, almost as if, you know, Europe were cursed because obviously they lost their first two games against Benfica and against Bayern. But if you look at this group, they're still in it, right? I mean, I know you don't have to mention the manager's name, but because I know you won't, but they're still in it. There's still enough to salvage there in the Champions League as well. Is that almost more important than the Clásico in some ways?
I mean, there's still hope for the Dutch guy, of course. I think it's we have to go back to 2000 when Barca didn't make it out from the group stages, and Benfica losing to Bayern, albeit in the last 20 minutes of the game, was huge, I think, for Barcelona. But this game, that Clásico on Sunday, I think is enormous. And I agree with everything Dan said. Real Madrid will go in a favourite. But Barca have to find something somewhere, whether it's from the fans. And by the way, the Camp Nou was empty, really, against Kiev. Not ideal preparation, really. But either it's from the fan, either the Dutch guy suddenly wakes up at night on Saturday and think like, this is it, I've got it. Eureka, I've got an idea for once. Or Ansu Fati does something special. De Jong does, De Jong, the good De Jong, not the bad De Jong, the good De Jong. Frankie does something really special. I don't know, something has to come. And maybe they can turn it around a little bit. But I agree with Dan. I think the damage is... it's so big that even a win in the Clásico, unless it's like 5-0, it's a manita with a great collective strength and performance. Apart from that, there would be still so much work to be done.
All right, the stakes are massive for both clubs, obviously, in every Clásico. And by the way, if you're in the US, in case I haven't mentioned, you can only watch this on ESPN Plus. But Dan, I think this is also pretty pivotal for Real Madrid, given how tight it is at the top of La Liga, with Real Sociedad at the top, with Sevilla up there, with Atletico Madrid up there. Sevilla and Atleti, of course, also have games in hand, as do Real Madrid. How big a lift was that win against Roberto de Zerbi and Shakhtar, considering also that Real Madrid have been really up and down this season in terms of performances?
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Gavin. The fact that you don't really know what you're going to get with Real Madrid so far this season. We've seen flashes of brilliance, haven't we, throughout the campaign in both La Liga and the Champions League. But then we've seen some dreadful performances as well. So you would think, well, you just won 5-0 away from home in a Champions League tie. Surely you'll take that momentum now into your biggest La Liga game of the season. However, there's this kind of lack of trust that you kind of have if you're a Real Madrid supporter as to what you're really going to get from the team. However, let's face it, preparations couldn't have been much better going into this tie. Obviously, he had a weekend off, and then that big win in the Champions League with bright performances from Vinicius Jr. and once again Karim Benzema. So you'll be looking to take that in to the Camp Nou this Sunday. I suppose the only issue that you've got if you're Real Madrid and you go into this as favourite, which I think they do, is the fact that if you lose this match, you're losing against a Barcelona team that is in complete turmoil. So how do you bounce back from that? How do you get your season back on track when you quite rightly say at the top of the table, it's really tight?
Jules, I'm less concerned about that because when it comes to turmoil and kind of softening the hard edges and dealing with unpleasant situations, I think we both agree that Carlo Ancelotti is the Zen master at that. He may have other failings, and he'd be the first to admit them, but I think he can generally deal with that better than most, you know, no matter the fact that Real Madrid, you're in the biggest media spotlight glare in the world. But I guess we saw earlier about, does David Alaba play left back, center back? With Ferland Mendy back, there's no question. He's going to play in the middle, and they'll simply be more solid. And that should help free things up a little bit further up the pitch. Right, Jules?
Yeah, completely. I thought Mendy had a good game against Shakhtar for the hour that he played, which was what was planned. And then coming off, no setback, I believe, from what I was told. So he will be ready for Sunday. Then, of course, that means Alaba and Eden Militao in the centre. And then it's what you do at right back. Do you keep Lucas Vazquez? Do you put Nacho in there? Someone who's a bit more defensive-minded, of course. Because either Memphis or Ansu Fati will play potentially on that left-hand side. I think Fati didn't start against Kiev probably because you wanted him ready for the game on Sunday to start. So then maybe you move Memphis in the center and Luke de Jong doesn't play, and then you've got someone on the right-hand side, whether that Serginho Dest, this great idea, or whatever, whoever else. I don't know, but maybe that battle on the right-hand side and left-hand side for Real Madrid and Barcelona, so Ansu Fati or Memphis against someone could be key too. But it'd be very interesting. But certainly the fact that Mendy is back for this game, I mean, has been back for Shakhtar and for this Clásico, is big, because I think there was a problem before, certainly against Espanyol, with that sort of left-hand side defensively for Real Madrid.
Well, obviously, I mean, you hit upon, I think, some what I think will be very, very key themes. Obviously, the battle of how do you deal with Ansu Fati on one side, and personally, I'd go with Nacho, free and easy. Just focus on defending there and let your attacking guys do their thing at the other end. If you're Real Madrid, if you're Barcelona, over on the right, Serginho Dest has done a nice job playing as a winger in the last two games. I'm not sure that that's really a long-term thing, and I don't just mean in terms of Dembele. Is the indication there, Dan, that he's going to continue doing that because, you know, you don't change a winning team and whatever, and he likes having perhaps a more disciplined right back behind him, whether it's Sergio Roberto, I assume, or possibly Mingueza?
Yeah, I think you're right, Gav. I think obviously you've won your last two games with Serginho Dest. The thing is, Serginho Dest as a winger for Barcelona. Is he really the best that they can get? Maybe that's kind of telling of where they are and the depth of their squad at the moment. But you look at that and you kind of think, well, Serginho Dest running at you, if you're that Real Madrid defence, doesn't quite shake you up as maybe others have in the past.
Well, you nailed it there. If you keep comparing it to the past, I think most people are going to look pretty bad in that in that role, to be fair. Jules, I just want to get from you, since you're a tactics guy, how do you line it up? I mean, are we taking it as read that front three is going to be Dest, Memphis, and Ansu Fati with Busquets, Gavi and De Jong in midfield, or could the Dutch guy, Ronald Koeman, maybe throw us a little bit of a curve, maybe get a little bit creative, maybe insert a little twist in there, whether it's Nico, whether it's I don't think he's going to move back to a back three, but maybe some version of 4-4-2 or 4-2-2-2. Maybe we see Philippe Coutinho. Any shot at that, or is he just best off not tinkering because you'll screw things up?
I think for Barcelona to win this game, he will have to find something to unsettle Real Madrid. We had, for the first time against Shakhtar, the midfield three of Real Madrid starting together this season, Cruz, Modric and Casemiro, who did a good job against a Shakhtar midfield, where we know that's what the Zerbi likes to have, and all that control and all those sort of combination in midfield, and those three, especially Casemiro, I thought was brilliant in controlling that area of the pitch. And I think it would be hard to trouble the balance from that Real Madrid team now that you've got that midfield three plus a more traditional back four, if you want, if you've got Nacho right back, Mendy, Alaba and Militao. And for that, maybe try something a bit different. I think the sort of Dest, Ansu Fati and Memphis is a bit too predictable in a way, I guess. So why not playing, for example, Dest at right back and bring, I don't know, Coutinho in. And Coutinho could come inside to leave that right channel for Sanilo Dest going forward. And you say to Dest, you know what, you almost play as a wing back and let's go for it. Certainly from the beginning of the game, let's try to unsettle them. Let's try to surprise them. You know, you could have Memphis playing as a false number nine, telling him to drop, and then Gavi and De Jong can run in behind and use that space that Memphis has left to drop a bit deeper. So I think they will have to go for something like this. I don't want the Luke de Jong, and I don't want the crosses, 1,000 crosses again, because I think Militao and Alaba will deal very well with that anyway. So that's certainly where I think the Dutch guys should approach that game. It might surprise me and not change anything and have Luke de Jong up there. But I think to unsettle this Real Madrid team that looked really solid against Shakhtar away from home in Ukraine, you need something a bit different. Try something else.
Yeah, that's what makes this so fascinating. One of the many things that makes this so fascinating, still for me, the biggest club game in European football. Dan, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Gab. 9 a.m. Eastern, ESPN2. We'll start our coverage if you're in the States.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Clasico. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Liverpool won 3-2 at the Wanda Metropolitano against Atletico Madrid. Jules, they deserve this, but might it have been a different story if your boy Antoine Griezmann hadn't been sent off?
Very much so, Gab, because at the moment when he was sent off with that high foot on Firmino, not that he knew anything about it because he was looking at the ball, but it's the right call, the red card, as harsh that it could look, but the Atletico were very much in control. They came back from 2-2 down to 2-2. Griezmann with the 2 goals, and then it looked a bit shaky, especially defensively for Liverpool. They were really bad defensively. Virgil van Dijk, one of the worst games that he's had since joining Liverpool, and then obviously at 11-10, Liverpool took back control and had a penalty after a stupid foul by Hermoso on Jota. Mo Salah scored the penalty, and then after that, they got a little scared at the end, but they won it. I think Klopp called it a dirty win, which is probably right, but it prepares them well for the game at Old Trafford against Manchester United at the weekend. Rami Abbas, who is Mohamed Salah's agent, is in town, and Salah is due a new contract, Gab, as his current one expires in 2023. Do you think this one will happen? And for how much? The wages seems to be maybe a point of issue between the two parts.
Yeah, there have been reports that he's demanding £400,000 a week, which would be about twice what he's earning now. Which, by the way, in the grand scheme of how much top earners in Europe make, isn't even that much for a guy of his quality. I think Liverpool have to be smart here. Obviously, they're losing a key part of their team-building strategy, Michael Edwards. But you don't re-sign Salah at any price. And it has to work, and it has to work within the context of their plans for the forward line, because, as we've noted many times before, Roberto Firmino and Sadio Mane are both roughly the same age and both go out of contract in 2023. Liverpool do not have unlimited funds. And, you know, I think their plan was probably a few years ago to sell one of the three, and then maybe the pandemic put an end to that. Now they're going to keep them together for Klopp's final years. That is the plan. I'd love to see them say, hey, you know what? Let's keep talking about this. Or you're still under contract. Let's just keep going. Let's see what happens. Because right now in the current climate, there aren't that many teams. People talk about the current value of Salah. Well, there aren't many teams that can afford to pay you 20 million pounds a year. Mm. A lot of those teams already have better players in that position, or players that they're locked into for a very long time in that position, or players who they can't shift. So I don't know. Other than Paris Saint-Germain, if Mbappe leaves, as appears likely, of course, and maybe one or two others, I just don't see that many guys are going to come up, give you a transfer fee, and give Salah, on the eve of his 30th birthday, a huge contract. No Neymar, so it's a good thing that Messi guy is around, because Paris Saint-Germain came from behind to beat Leipzig 3-2.
Oh, Gab, they didn't play well, let's be honest here. Again, not sure what Pochettino tried to do. He got it wrong tactically, the 4-3-3, with really wide wingers, Draxler and Messi, didn't work out. But they came back and won. They won, and it's a bit similar to United, if you want, only because of individual brilliance from Messi, from Mbappe, who had another good game, but he's good for Paris. Talking about Paris, do you like my shirt, by the way? My dad played under 15 with that for Saint-Mandé in the Paris suburbs when he was a kid, hey? But I expect much more from PSG and Pochettino going forward, that's for sure, because in many respects, that was a lucky win against Jesse March and his team. Milan, with loads of players out, injured, Gab, lose to Porto, that's three defeats in three now. Are they doomed at sea, or can they do an Atalanta from last season or two seasons ago?
I think they can do an Atalanta. I think it's going to be extremely tough for the situation that they're in. They did not play well against Porto. I'm certainly not comparable to how they played with Atletico Madrid, when they should have won and deserved to win, and there were some terrible refereeing mistakes. I think the mood still has to be pretty good, but you know, you look around, Atleti are on 4 points. If Liverpool can do you a favor in the next match and beat Atleti and you win, then suddenly you're 1 point. You win at home against Porto. You're 1 point out of second place. So you have to think in those terms. Bayern take a while to get going and then destroy Benfica 4-0. Jules, they're terrifying right now, especially Leroy Sané.
Yeah, great. Maybe the most improved player in that squad since Nagelsmann has arrived. Moving back to his best position, I was going to say, more on the left-hand side. Or it's not even more central, almost as a number 10 at times. He's got a great free kick and then a tap in. It took them a while. You're right, 70 minutes, it was still 0-0. And after that, they scored four between 70th and 90th minute. And it was a good win. It was a good win for them, establishing them even more at the top of that group. And Gab, in that game, there was no one on the bench, no Jurgen Nagelsmann, because he tested positive for COVID. Is that a big deal that he will be missing the next 10 days now? Has he have to self-isolate?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, it is a big deal because he's sick with COVID. And we've seen, you know, while obviously he's a fit young man, there's been long COVID, there's been all sorts of things. We wish him a speedy recovery. And I think it is a big deal because, you know, he's very hands-on in working with his players, and that's a big part of the reason why Bayern are so good right now. It's not a big deal because Bayern are through in the Champions League, and you know they can pretty much run an autopilot at least for a while because the talent gap is so great. How about some love for Ajax? They're undefeated.
Oh,
they put four past Dortmund. They have a 37-year-old cult hero keeper named Remco, and yeah, that Sebastian Alle guy is really, really good. Or are you just going to blame Marco Rose and the defending for screwing up once again?
I mean, the defending was dreadful, that's for sure, Gab. I mean, I don't know what Thomas Meunier, we know he's not a defender, really. Let's be honest, Thomas, you won't take offense. But Emre Can, Hummels, everything was just so... They could have lost that game 8-0. It was that embarrassing, that humiliating. Well done to Ajax, played great. Anthony is an incredible player to watch, but it was too easy. It was far too easy for Ajax in that game against Dortmund. Juventus are also unbeaten in their group, Gab. They won 1-0 at Zenit with Max Allegri grinding out those 1-0 wins. I think he's the fourth in a row or something, which is his trademark, let's be honest here.
It's his trademark, although I think he wouldn't want it to be his trademark. I think they'd want to be playing more attacking football, scoring more goals, being more effective in front of goal. But hey, they're not just undefeated, they're perfect, along with Ajax and a couple others. You know, they've won 3 of 3. That is a big deal. That's what they need for the time being going forward. I think we'll see the step up when Dybala returns, when things are a little more settled, and he can get the best out of his front men. Chelsea beat Malmo 4-0, but both Timo Werner and Romelu Lukaku get injured. Jules, I kind of think right now that the only thing that's going right for Tuchel is the results, which I guess are pretty important.
Yes, you're right. It's important, and they played much better with the ball. I mean, Malmo was so poor. They're such a bad team. But at least we saw a bit more triangles. We saw a bit more movement with the ball than what we've seen from Chelsea in the last few games. But losing Werner and Lukaku especially is a huge blow. We don't know yet how long they're out. But let's hope for not too long. Kai Havertz, you expect, we play as a number 9 against Norwich at the weekend, and then the game's coming on. But yeah, it's a bad night. And you know what? It's one fun at the time, Gab. I'm not sure you had to play Lukaku in that game. The day before, Tuchel said he's overplayed, he's tired mentally, physically, and then he goes and plays him in that game. Or maybe he was to break the goal drought after 6 games in a row with not scoring for Lukaku. I don't know. But now, with hindsight and the injury, maybe it was not the best call. Man City destroyed Club Brugge on Tuesday night, 5-1. And I looked at the stat, Gab, and I think it was the game where they ran the most with the highest intensity press, the highest intensity runs as well, in a game that they'd won after 25 minutes. That's pretty impressive from them, wasn't it?
It was impressive. I always wonder about that. I mean, I didn't know that stat. They certainly looked really, really good. Brugge are not a terrible team, but they were made to look a terrible team by City. I'm surprised that you'd expend so much energy in that situation. Obviously, Guardiola making a bunch of substitutions in the second half. And shout out, by the way, to Cole Palmer, who he comes on and he scores, yeah. I think, with his first touch, or scores one of the quickest goals in a long time in the Champions League for a guy making his debut. Steve Bruce has finally been let go by Newcastle United. Jules, he said it's been really tough because he didn't feel the support from the fans, because fans didn't like him, because he felt that some people want him to fail, because they called him inept tactically, and I find this really bizarre. He actually said this because they called him, quote, a cabbage head, which I guess is better than calling him Mrs. Doubtfire, which is what others have called him. Yeah. I guess that £7 million compensation package might alleviate some of the pain.
Oh, I think it will. I think it will, Gab. Certainly, you feel less sad if you're Steve Bruce after the check gets into your bank account. Yeah, of course, he had a tough, for him, the local Geordie, Newcastle fans, he had a tough time. They were not good, let's be honest. And I think it was just a matter of time before he got sacked anyway, even if Mike Ashley has still been the manager. Talking about managers, Graham Jones, his former assistant, will take charge now until they appoint the right guy. Paulo Fonseca, our boy, he is on the short list amongst other names like Lucien Favre and Frank Lampard. Where do you think they're going to go? They might go.
I don't know. I think they're still casting a wide net. All we know is Fonseca's talking to him because he's unemployed. He has time on his hands. I think it'd be a great choice. But I think they're leaving the door open for others as they speak. And they have a lot of trust in Graham Jones, who, by the way, as you said, Roberto Martinez is a longtime assistant. Can we show some love for Salzburg? They beat Wolfsburg 3-1. They're top of the group. And everybody loves Karim Adeyemi.
Oh, he's been brilliant. They're so good to watch, so entertaining. A lot of young players with a lot of intensity, a lot of movement, a bit crazy at times. But Adeyemi and Noah Okafor, who had two goals and did really well. Very entertaining, great to watch. Let's see how far they can go. Inter also won at the weekend against Sheriff in midweek with a great goal by Edin Dzeko. Are they back on track now, Gab?
Yeah, they're back on track. Obviously, they need to follow up, ideally by not getting stuffed when they go and travel to Transnistria. I think a point would do them, and then they can hopefully sort things out, although obviously they prefer 3 points. Arturo Vidal actually played really well, scored a nice goal at the end to make it 3-1. I think it was important. You know, we always talk about Inter and chaos and psychodrama. It was important that after they kind of, you know, lost their nerve at the end against Lazio in that acrimonious 3-1 defeat at the weekend, they bounced back with a professional performance, and they did. We told you it would happen. Well, not just us. Everybody in the world did, and obviously it did. Ansu Fati has signed a new contract at Barcelona. I think it's a big relief for everybody all around. That is the important part. It's not the billion euro clause, that's the billion euro release clause that's in there. That's just a weird quirk of Spanish football.
Exactly, please don't focus about that 1 billion. It was similar for the Pedri extension. Don't worry about that. Just think that it's another of those very talented youngsters that will stay at the club on the long term until 2027. I think that's the length of the contract. Great news for Ansu Fati, who's come back after a year out in great form already, will be a key player for Barcelona in the Clásico, and that's a really, really good thing done. Now you can focus on Gavi and whoever else you want to extend and give a new deal. But that's only, I think, it's a big weight off the shoulders of everyone at the club, around the club, to know for sure that Ansu Fati will stay at the club. FIFA President Gianni Infantino spoke after the FIFA Council on Wednesday. Gab, the Bayern World Cup is getting closer, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think it's moving further away. Obviously, there's been a ton of opposition to this from UEFA and CONMEBOL. Infantino saying, well, we're going to have another big stakeholder meeting and just before Christmas. He sort of almost seemed to distance himself, saying, well, it's not my plan. It's Arsene Wenger's plan, and people have asked us to do it. I think it's a combination of the opposition. The fact that maybe I think they also ran some numbers and said maybe this isn't quite as lucrative as we thought it would be. I think also some other confederations have gone a little bit lukewarm on this. Thinking of Asia here. Look, my thoughts on this. I'm all for trying something different. I hope that the good parts of the reform, and I go back to this, reforming the transfer windows, the international windows, so that we don't have, you know, a break in September, break in October, break in November, breaking up the season and everything, less travel, more meaningful games, the mandatory rest period, those are all good things. That was part of the plan, but I hope we don't lose that part simply because we're not going to have a biennial World Cup. Also, look out for the fact that we might see other solutions, whether it's some kind of global nations league at the end, or maybe the top eight play somewhere, or top 16, you know, some sort of reduced version, but tying it to the nations league in each confederation, which right now only exists in Europe and North America, of course, or possibly a club World Cup, a proper full-blown 24, 32 team Club World Cup to be held somewhere. I think that is still an alternate possibility because they want to raise some funds. They want to raise development funds. There's no question about that. On that front, it is about money.
Yeah.
Karim Benzema's trial over the Mathieu Valbuena sex tape is underway. Jules, he wasn't there. Remind us of what's happened and what's at stake.
Oh yeah, he's been charged for blackmailing or attempt to blackmail. It's not him directly, but through other people to blackmail Mathieu Valbuena. There was this sex tape that someone found on Valbuena's phone and almost threatened. It's not that clear, but threatened to put it out unless Valbuena was giving money. Basically, this is the idea. Everybody is disputing what kind of format, if they asked for money, didn't ask for money or anything like that. And Benzema spoke to Valbuena, let's put it that way, when they were together with the national team in 2015 about that video. There was someone quite close to Benzema that was also involved in this. And actually, we thought that we were not going to have a verdict until maybe in 2 or 3 months. But it looks like the verdict could happen as early as Friday. So you will know if Karim Benzema is proven innocent or actually guilty, and what the sentence could be. They risk 5 years in jail and €75,000 fine. So we will know apparently tomorrow, on Friday, we're recording this on Thursday, the fate of Karim Benzema and the other guys charged in this Mathieu Valbuena sextape blackmail story. The Premier League clubs have voted to ban clubs who agree sponsorship deals with companies linked to their owners. So, for example, right now, Manchester City and Etihad could not have the sponsorship that they have, the sponsorship deal that they have right now under this new law, this new vote. Gab, this is quite significant, isn't it?
Well, there's two things. I mean, they had the vote on it. 18 of the 20 clubs voted in favor. Manchester City abstained. And Newcastle, funny enough, voted against it. Yeah. It's not entirely clear if this is legal, if it's there's a restraint of trade issue. Personally, I understand where they're coming from on this. And it's all linked, you know, down the road, financial fair play and whatnot. If you remember going back, UEFA had a ban, or not a ban, but they looked at what they called related party transactions, and they discounted them and whatever else to market value. The tricky thing here, Jules, is when we talk about owner, you know, sponsors who are related to the owners, I mean, Khaldun Al Mubarak is the chairman of Manchester City. He's also the chief executive of Mubadala, which is a massive private equity fund that is worth like something like $200 billion and invests in just about everything all around the world. So it's almost hard to find instances where they're not related. Like I said, let's see how this. I think we're going to see a lot of lawyers making a lot of money out of this, as is often as is often the case. Lille are held to a scoreless draw by Sevilla. Jules, is this an opportunity missed for our boy Gorvenek?
Yeah, it was, Gab. They were just not at the top, what they should have been to try to beat the Sevilla team. I guess the good thing and the good point, and they got a point, is that they didn't lose a game that they could not win. And maybe too much in the past, French clubs in Europe, when they were playing against the better sides, ended up losing those kind of games. So at least this is a point for Sevilla, for Lille against Sevilla. They're still very much in it because it's quite a tight group, despite Salzburg winning and be ahead slightly of everybody else. So they still have a chance to qualify, but they'll have to do better. Too many missed passes, misplaced passes, heavy touches, all that kind of stuff, even when they were in good position. So I think they have a lot of regrets, and they will have to do better if they want to keep their hopes alive to qualifying for the last 16. Pavel Nedved says that Paulo Dybala's new contract at Juventus is imminent. He's 27, Gab. Paulo Dybala, that is not Nedved. And his current contract expires this summer. So this is a big thing for Juve if they manage to extend him in their terms as well.
It all depends on the terms, Jules. You said it there. Because, the reality with Paulo Dybala, when they were having these conversations before, and we don't know the terms or the wages yet, which some of the reporting will come out soon, but we talked earlier about Mo Salah. The terms that they were talking about is Mo Salah type money. And I can't understand why, it's difficult for Liverpool to pay Mo Salah, say, 20 million. But, Juventus, you have to keep Dybala at whatever cost because you lose him on a free. The reality is, I think Dybala has shown flashes at Juve. He's had injuries. He's also been inconsistent. Nobody's arguing with the fact that he isn't supremely talented, but he does tie you in to a certain way of playing. I hope if Juve do this, I hope they get creative with a contract, both in terms of length, whether it's options, whether it's performance-related bonuses somehow or team bonuses somehow, because I think it would be a mistake to just, go handcuff yourself to Dybala for the next 5 years, given what his previous 5 years have been like, unless it's at the right price, of course. My boy Sebastian Coates scores twice as Sporting win 4-1 away to Besiktas. Jules, this is pretty huge if they're going to beat out Dortmund for place in the knockouts, right? Are they going to do it?
Yeah, you're right. It was a huge win. They had to go and win in Turkey in a very hostile environment and atmosphere. It was a fantastic game, I have to say. End-to-end, so open, far too open, probably for many people out there. And it could have ended up 6-5. Everybody touched the woodwork, the post, the missed chances. Batshuayi, Alex Teixeira scored an incredible goal that was ruled out for offside, which was the right call, but literally for a few centimeters. And in the end, you're right, big win, huge win for Ruben Amorim, for Sebastian Coates and for Sporting. Because, now if they win at home against Besiktas in the reverse fixtures in 2 weeks' time and Ajax beat Dortmund again, then they can go and snatch that second place. So huge win for them. Lazio, as you know, are known for the Falcon Olympia that flies around the stadium above the pitch before their game. Although we might not see him anytime soon, Gab, because of what happened to his Falconer, a guy called Juan Bernabe.
Yeah, obviously, it's very cool when the eagle goes around. I mean, Lazio are not the only team that do it. Benfica, of course, famously do it as well.
Nice as well.
So this guy, Juan Bernabe, he's Spanish. He works for the company, I guess, that looks after the eagle. And after the game, he's got the little eagle on his fist, and he wanders over to the Lazio Ultras. And And he decides that, well, wouldn't it be really, really funny if I made a Roman salute or a fascist salute? Now, this is something which, for historical reasons, has long been associated with Lazio. It's also something that is technically illegal in Italy. It's something that the club have tried to distance themselves from. It's something that the fans try to avoid doing because they know they get in trouble when they do it. And now this fool goes and brings it all back. You know, he came out and he said, well, I'm not a fascist, although I am right wing and I voted for Vox in Spain. And Lazio have issued a statement. They've saying that, you know, this guy is not a club employee. We're not responsible for him. But in any case, you know, we've suspended relations with him. Hey, Lazio, great that you've done that. I'd like you to go further. I never want to see this man in the stadium ever again. And you have to understand, you can't get away with that. He's not a club employee. Just because he's a contractor that you bring in to before games, the man is walking around in a Lazio shirt with an eagle and you're paying him to do it. So in that sense, he may not be official club employee. He does represent you. So it's good that they've come out and made this statement. I'd like to see them even stronger. Villarreal went away to Young Boys 4-1. Jules, Unai Emery showing once again he knows a thing or two about knockout competitions.
Yes, he did. You were right, Gabby. It was a good game too. I mean, very open because Young Boys had a lot of chances and Rulli had to be very good in goal as well. They hit the woodwork, I think twice maybe in the game, the Swiss team. But Villarreal were good. They were clinical with Moreno, great goal from Yerry Pino as well. Very good organization overall on that plastic pitch. So well done to Villarreal to go and win away like that. They did. In not the yellow submarine, they were red submarine, Gab, because they wore that red away shirt for that game. So well done to Unai Emery and well done to Villarreal. Gab, I know how much you love your club World Cup, and I do too. And now we know where the next two are going to be played.
Look, the Club World Cup, I love the Club World Cup's daddy, the original, the Intercontinental Cup between the champion of Europe and South America. Part of it is I had the privilege growing up in partly in Japan of going to watch your boy Michel Platini for Juventus against Argentinos Juniors way back in 1986. Yeah, I'm really dating myself now. I was a little kid, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was
a big deal. It was a big deal in Europe. You get up at the crack of dawn, you watch these games from Tokyo. It really was a big deal. This, obviously, a different competition. It's lost a lot of its luster. They're looking at how they can reform it. But in the meantime, they got to figure out how to play it. Japan saying, for COVID reasons, we don't want to host it. And so it's going to be in the United Arab Emirates in late January, which I think Tuchel and Chelsea obviously wanted to know that because they'll be wondering how much it'll disrupt their campaign. Leicester City played on Wednesday in the Europa League and Patson Daka made history in the 4-3 comeback win over Spartak Moscow.
What a performance. Incredible. And we knew how talented he was, of course. We saw him with RB Salzburg in the last few seasons, but this was very, very special. Obi, you can say, against Moscow, and they left themselves exposed a lot. There was a lot of space to run in behind for Daka. Madison was brilliant. Iheanacho was brilliant as well. But four goals in Europe. I think he becomes Leicester's joint top scorer in Europe with Jamie Vardy and Barnes, I think. This is it. No one has scored more than four. I mean, I know it's a young European history, but still, well done to him. And you would expect him to still be behind Iheanacho and Vardy in the picking order, but certainly for him arriving in a new club like this is great. Well done, Patson Daka, and well done, Leicester, for that win in Russia. Gab, last week, we remember on Monday, we celebrated Ivan Perisic for scoring a penalty with his right foot after scoring one with his left foot before. We mentioned Ousmane Dembele, Cazorla, and Andreas Bremer, who scored in his career free kicks with his right foot and with his left foot. And one of our listeners, Tony Mella, mentioned on Twitter that he was not the only one, Bremer, to have done that.
That's right. I think it's Tony Molak. So I should have remembered this because, two free kicks, one with either foot in one game. Take a bow. Of course, Simone Verdi did it as well while playing for Bologna.
Wow.
And if I remember correctly, he didn't just blast one and place one. I think he placed both of them with either foot. I love those stories. Verdi, by the way, many, many moons ago, came through the ranks of Milan where You know, at 15, 16, they were hoping he would be Milan's answer to one Lionel Messi. Yeah, no pressure there. Didn't quite work out with that, but hey, take a bow. You're in the history books alongside the legendary Andy Bremen. Jules, I think it's time for another update on the wild and wonderful world of Wanda and Maurito.
They're back. They're back together, Gabby. Oh, what a great love story. Forget everything that happened before, that she accused him to being unfaithful, all of that. They're in love again. She says that she's protecting her family from, you know, the bad girls. He's only following her on Instagram. No one else, literally not you or me. No one, just Wanda. And let's see how long it lasts. That's all I'm going to say. Newcastle United have asked their fans not to come to stadiums dressed as an Arab sheikh, you know, all those outfits, Gab. What is it all about?
Well, look, I don't think anybody was trying to be offensive. But yeah, they all showed up with traditional Arab, not all, but many showed up in traditional Arab or Gulf-inspired clothing. They had the headdress. They had one guy who was pretending to walk around on a camel. It's definitely, I think, culturally inappropriate. So Newcastle have said, guys, if you don't wear this stuff regularly, please don't wear it to our stadium. I think they don't mean it to offend, but I think it can be seen as definitely offensive. Right, Jules, that brings us to an end, but we got to come back on Monday because we're going to have that completely wild weekend, those 7 hours of folly from Madrid and Barcelona, Marseille and Paris Saint-Germain, Liverpool and Manchester United, and of course the Derby d'Italia, Inter and Juventus. So I will see you on Monday for that. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.